Blog Talk Radio.
Soccer season ends and immediately begins again. So we never have to worry about having material to talk about. That's right, the music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the Two Guys Soccer Show. I am Mike, he is Stead.
Hello.
And we're ready to go. Yes, Stead, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. Hanging in there.
What type of night is it for you tonight?
Type of night is it for me? This is a celebratory Buffalo Trace night for me tonight. So that's where I am right now. Kicking back, ready to talk some football.
All right. I think it's feeling more like a single malt night for me. So a Buffalo Trace single malt should be a good night.
That's
a perfect segue into the fact that we are sponsored, as always, by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia's premier venue. Sports and Live Entertainment, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. The place to be tomorrow at 3 p.m. when the USA women kick off their defense of the World Cup. And we'll have plenty of time to get into that. We also have plenty of time to talk about the U.S. U-20s and their quarterfinal run in the World Cup. And hopefully, although I don't really want to, the debacle that was the last week for the men's World Cup, or the men, USA men. Two games, 4 goals conceded, none scored. Yeah, not good.
Yeah, not good.
But let's focus on things that we think might be successful and talk a little bit about the USA women. We'll be joined by two guests in a little bit. We have Tom Heath and Mohan coming on to talk a little bit about the Women's World Cup, and we're looking forward to having them. But before we get our guests on, Steb, what do you think about this World Cup? Because I have my thoughts, but I want to hear yours first.
Well, I mean, in any situation with the women's team, I always think it's the U.S. Women's Cup to lose. And, because mainly I just don't think the rest of the world can compete with the depth of the athletes in the United States. The fact that soccer is still one of the top three sports, I think, for women in the United States, at least I'll say for team sports for women in the United States, their ability to attract the best athletes just far outweighs the men's side. And you're looking at, as far as how long have American women been involved in athletics, you can look at Title IX legislation that occurred at the collegiate and high school level and just see that the U.S. are definitely playing with a bit more in the tank. It's akin to, I'd say, like early Canadian hockey when they were winning Olympic matches 22-0 back in the early part of the 20th century. And I just feel like the U.S. women, it's always going to be the tournament to lose until we really see a true power from another part of the world step up. I mean, beginning, it was China was their big rival. That seems to have fizzled. Then it became Germany. We've seen them as a rival. And then Sweden, and then occasionally France. And then for a little while, it was Brazil. But, you know, you look at the Brazilian team, a lot of their players were coming from other sports. Had just picked up a soccer ball. I believe their goalkeeper in either the last Olympics or the last World Cup had been a volleyball player until about 4 months before the tournament started, and then she was Brazil's starting goalkeeper. So, you've seen Canada come alive. They have a strong squad. It's great to see some new countries come and get involved. You're seeing more countries from Africa. It's not just Nigeria anymore. You got Cameroon in there as well. So, in that respect, it's very positive. But I just really don't see – until someone beats U.S., I think it's very idiotic to root against them in any way.
I've gone back and forth on this, and I'm with you. USA Soccer has been the dominant power in women's soccer for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we are on the 20th anniversary of the First World Cup in 1999. They're coming off of a World Cup, which they won in dominating fashion, 5-2 in the final. Carly Lloyd with the hat trick and the golden ball performance. We all remember that volley from the halfway line, I think her second, that was just immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
And one of, I think, the biggest games in women's soccer in the United States. You know, the 99 game that Brandi Chastain won with that famous penalty might have been slightly bigger. But when I think about just the viewership for the last, the semifinals and the finals, you know, you had places full watching the women play. I went down for a semifinal game 4 years ago, and the place was full. And it wasn't full because it was a Friday or Saturday. As I recall, it was like a Wednesday. And the bar I was at was full, and the people were there to watch the USA women. And I hadn't seen anything like that for women's soccer in this country. From that, you had the, you know, they win, they beat Germany 2-0, they go on, they beat, they avenge that finals loss in 11 against Japan, and you have the growth of a professional league. It's on its second iteration in the form of the NWSL. And women's soccer has just gotten more attention in this country. But while that's been happening, you've had this development in France, which I've been paying attention to. And
yeah, well, France drugged South Korea through the mud in their opening game. So, yeah, France has definitely been coming on for a little while.
And on a lot of places, and I can't tell whether this is the hipster pick that has just gained so much popularity that it's made them the betting favorite, that it's at home, that it's in Europe, and that's where the betting lines are coming from. But in a lot of places, France are the favorites to win. It helps when 8 of your 11 players all play for Lyon, four-time consecutive women's Champions League champions. And right now, the best playing women's team in the world, with the best players not playing in America, right? So I'm not 100% sure. When we played France at the beginning of January, we lost in Nice 3-1. Now, that was not a full-strength USA women's team. They were coming out of a very intense training camp. Jill Ellis was experimenting. She didn't have some of her regulars available. She said that they weren't up to full fitness. In fact, she had run them pretty hard. Their next couple of matches, they drew in the She Believes Cup 2-2 with both Japan and England. But since then, they've been on a roll. And I think six straight without conceding a goal. And the last time I recall them conceding was to Australia, which was a 5-2 win. The question is our defense. We've got a new back line. We've got a new goalkeeper. Not 100% sure. This is the first time, you know, this is the first time that we've gone into a Gold Cup, into a World Cup where we don't have either Brianna Scurry or Hope Solo available in goal for us.
Right. Well, you know, Brianna Scurry was also, but Brianna Scurry was also, I love how everybody talks about that Brandi Chastain moment, but what kind of gets lost in the shuffle is that little step out that Brianna Scurry took to make that save in that last, in one of the later Chinese players' shots, and that got a little bit of run, but you saw, you know, a lot of the men's games were doing that, where players were kind of like creeping up and taking a little step before the players were shooting, and she took a quite large step, but that, I think that put the pressure on the shooter, and she made a great dive to make the save. But since that, I don't think she gets enough kind of like play on that, because all of a sudden you saw a referee starting to call that a bit tighter. So good on her, though, for doing a little gamesmanship to get that save. I don't want that to get lost in the shuffle for that pivotal game that occurred for women's soccer.
Have you ever heard her describe that?
No, I haven't.
She went over, and the way she tells the story it has actually defined a lot how I look at penalty kicks. And she said, you know, penalty kicks aren't stopped, they're missed.
Right.
And the coach told her, you only need to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that particular Chinese kicker looked up and she looked her in the eyes and she said, "This is my one."
Yeah, that's awesome. I got to make sure I hear that. That's going to be a fascinating listen. I'm going to check that out definitely.
Yeah, it was on one. I think it was on an ESPN documentary
mm-hmm.
about that particular game. But the way she tells it, she said, "You know, they told her you only got to get one.
Yeah.
If you get one, we'll be good." And she looked in the woman's eyes, and she came up, and this particular woman had her head down, and she wouldn't look at her. And she knew at that moment, she said, "This is my one." And now, granted, she had to make the play. She guessed right. She got the save. She did that step up, and she got it. And full credit to her. But, I mean, just hearing her talk about that really transformed how I look at how I look at goalkeeping.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think of I'm not sure you saw this, but, you know, you brought up Hope Solo. Does she just need to go away? Because, I mean, today she's up there talking about how Jill Ellis is not a good leader and how she isn't the right coach and everything like that. It seems like she just can't keep herself from throwing darts at people. What do you think about that?
I am not a huge fan of former players throwing shots.
Yeah.
Throwing grenades a day or two before the game starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she knows her profile, and she knows that it's going to be picked up. And I feel like there's a lot of sour grapes there because age-wise, ability-wise, she still strongly feels like she should be a part of this team.
Mm-hmm.
But after the off-the-field antics that had happened in the last cycle...
Right. I'm glad you said that plurally because she's had several of them.
No, there was the abuse allegations, mm-hmm. the driving of the team van, and then mm-hmm. finally the comments after the 2016 Olympics when she mm-hmm. called Sweden a bunch of punks.
Right.
I think that there was always a tendency
yeah.
not to put her out the pasture,
mm-hmm.
but they needed to be in a new cycle to do it. And
right.
so they just gave her the excuse to move her out. But age-wise, she should still be there. Ability-wise, I still think she thinks that she should still be there. So anything Hope Solo says, I take with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, there are times where she makes a lot of good points. I thought that when she was running for USA Soccer president, there was a lot of things that she brought up that I really thought were good points, but a lot of that gets lost in the bombast, and therefore the message gets lost by the messenger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. I think she would be best served because I think she does have a role to play in U.S. women's soccer, and I think it would be unwise for her or for U.S. soccer to kind of like just kind of push her aside and hope that she doesn't say anything anymore because she is very articulate with the issues that face not just U.S. women's soccer, but U.S. soccer in general. And she does make very, very good points. I think it would be beneficial for her if she stepped back for a little bit and let the questions come back to her instead of seeking the questions in the first place. That way, I think some of her controversies she can finally move on with some of her controversies because, I mean, it's really not fair. I mean, everybody deserves the chance to kind of go, look, yeah, that happened. That was years ago. Let me move on. And she is she's someone that gets eyes on the sport as well from a pop culture perspective. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think, though, that if she just kind of like took a little break and then came back, it would be a bit better. But I don't know the context behind these comments, if she was a approach or if she was poking or if she was just throwing darts on Twitter. So...
Either way, though, the context of it was that she didn't need to say what she said.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, rather than say, okay, she's a capable coach, she's guided us well, I have full faith in her. You know, she did a good job. She said she's not a good coach. She doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She puts too much pressure. She puts too much on her assistant. She cracks under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people have not been convinced by Jill Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Pia was such a huge figure when she left. And Jill just kind of stepped into that job. you know, a lot of what happens with Jill in the future is going to be determined by what happens after this World Cup. So we see with the men's teams, it's highly unusual for a coach to get two World Cup cycles.
Right.
And a lot of what her future, her job is dependent on what happens in this, because she has embarked on this last 4 years on a transformation of the USA women's team. One of the big moves that's going to be questioned is pushing Hope Solo out. You know, another one, you know, you see how she's transformed the lines, you know, kind of move Carly Lloyd to the side. She's no longer a guaranteed starter. This is the former two-time FIFA player, women's player of the year, and the Golden Ball winner. You know, again, age-wise, she still could be an integral part of the women's not. You know, how does it look when you move Julia Ertz, who was one of your most dependable defenders in the last World Cup, into midfield? And now you have questions at the back.
Yeah, and she's also faced lots of questions about just like some of the players that she chose not to take with her. So, if you're right, if things don't go well, all those questions that are going to resurface about the decisions that she made leading up to the tournament.
It's a lot when almost half of your team are debutantes. I don't know that we've seen this amount of turnover in a World Cup cycle, but she wants to play a new, I want to say new style. There's more pressing. There's more emphasis on offense. And it's kind of a lesson that was learned from the Sweden game. And you saw a lot of it today with Japan versus Argentina, right, where that was a nil-nil draw. Argentina picked up their first points in a Women's World Cup. They've lost their previous 32 games, their previous six games, by a goal differential of 33-2. And what they decided to do against Japan was to sit back, remain organized, and play a defensive game. Now, we've seen in the past, and this, I don't want to make this seem like this is a USA women's thing. This is a thing for any gender and any form of soccer. When you are an offensive team, the tendency is for teams to sit back, play compact, organized defense, and invite you forward and expect you to score. We've seen that so many times with how Barcelona played, Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, Man City, Spain, all of those teams. And they invite you on and they say, all right, score on us if you can. Right. And one of the toughest things I think for any elite team to do is break down an entrenched opponent. And I'm not saying, like, I've seen Celtic do to Barcelona what Sweden did to the USA women, where you sit back and you pick up a goal or two on the counterattack, and it happens. So, but she needed to figure out a way to get around that, because that was how everybody was playing us.
Right.
And to be honest, I think they lost in the Olympics that way, and they lost in the in the 2011 finals that way, and that's what happens. So we've got a couple of guests on the line. We want to bring in Tom and Mohan. How you guys doing? Might have gotten that one a little early. Anyway, but a lot of what is going to happen is going to be dependent on how they play. Now, and here's my other thing. You know, when you open up with Thailand, I don't think we can learn anything the first two games.
No.
We don't know anything until the third game when they play Sweden.
Right. If you got to look at Thailand, Thailand's already won the World Cup for them. I mean, this is it. Yeah, this is it. They're gonna lose three games. Probably have a goal differential of -12.
Yeah. In fact, I don't want to say that we can't learn anything about the women. What I do want to say is that the only thing that we can learn about these first two games for the USA women is going to be bad. Because they're in this position where I think if they don't win these first two games, 3-4-0. Then we start to have questions.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. Absolutely. Considering they beat Belgium by six, there's no question that they should put it. Yeah, if they don't win by three or four, I would even say three would be bad against a squad like Thailand, unless they have some talent in there that nobody's really aware of. It's not going to be ugly for that. It's a relative lose for the United States, and they need to just not take much of this game. Just go out there, win, and try not to get anybody hurt, and move on.
You've got Thailand and Chile coming up, and I think given that you saw the French women win against South Korea 4-0, if they don't go out and equal or better that, then we have questions.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have, I would say if you're not going into the Sweden game with a +7 goal differential, I think questions will be asked. We saw them get off to a relatively slow start last time around. Remember, they were playing with the 4-4-2. They were trying to play long ball, put it on Abby Wambach's head.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until she switched to 4-2-3-1, dropped Abby Wambach to the bench, and put Alex Morgan as the primary forward that we really saw them come to life. Mm-hmm. That was when we got the 2-0 win against Germany, and we got the 5-2 against Japan.
Japan, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what we could learn in this first couple of matches, I think, and I am a little bit concerned. You know, mostly, can they keep clean sheets? It's going to be a big one.
Well, I mean, again, if Thailand can squeeze out a goal, then that's going to be, of course, a national holiday for Thailand, where it's going to be a serious issue for the United States, even if it's just some fluke mistake by a defender when they're already up 4-0. Again, I think it goes back to your earlier point where we're really not going to learn much from this game, and they just need to go out there and win and get the hell off the field, and just not even think about it. Like don't answer any press questions. Just do what you need to do and go. I really don't want to put too much into an opening World Cup game, especially when they've been trucking everybody in their warmups before the tournament. So, yeah, just win and get off the field. You know, work on your passing game, work on your control, practice some zone defense, practice some offensive plays or something like that. Get off the field.
Is this not like the best possible scenario for the women, in that their toughest group opponent is their last game? So you have two full games to get used to it.
Right.
Now, I somewhat disagree. If it's a fluke goal in a 7-1 beatdown, I don't pay as much attention as if it's an opening goal and a 2-1 win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the thing is, and to be honest, I think the thing is that what we want to see most from the USA women is we don't want to see them have to put in much effort against either Thailand or Chile.
Right.
We don't want to ever feel like this game was in doubt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've seen that happen. You know, the aforementioned Argentina and Japan result from earlier today, we saw Italy take out Australia over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a kind of big one because Italy is in a group with Germany and Brazil and Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Australia was still well placed, but they still had their two toughest games in front of them. And it is hard to see right now how they're going to be able to finish second in that group.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not surprising, though, because I think the difference between a country like Italy, which, you know, the women's team doesn't have much history, versus a country like Australia, where Australia has been involved on the women's game a bit longer on a world level as far as exposure is concerned, But Italy has a national history of coaching and development. So a country like Italy, it seemed like a country like Brazil, when they decided to inject some of their wealth and knowledge into their women's game, I don't think it should be too much of a surprise that all of a sudden they start to win some games. I mean, the resources that they have as far as educating young players are infinite in compared to Australia, where, you know, of course, if this was a game like rugby sevens, it would be a completely different story. So, you know, it's not too surprising for me, and you could easily see Brazil and Italy getting out of this group without really much of a problem.
Yeah, but I mean, the one thing I will say is so many of the Australian women play collegiate soccer over here.
True.
So they get that development where you don't get the early development from Europe. You don't have as many. And I'm not saying that there aren't, but there are a number of Australian players who have come over to the U.S. and played collegiate women's soccer and mm-hmm. gotten that opportunity over here. And I think that is why they have been there or thereabouts for so long. Now, they're not considered to be one of the favorites, but they're among the better teams, and a lot of that has to do with the development that they get over here. Now,
but they're also competing with a lot more sports for their attention over there in Australia, I think, because soccer is not a popular sport, as popular a sport there that they have, you know, as far as rugby, also football, cricket, you know, things like that, that the women do play, and they play very well. So mm-hmm. even with them coming here for the development from the U.S. game, I just seems, and I'm kind of speaking out of my knowledge of the geography and just like, and it's some sort of history that I have, but not from any like firsthand knowledge of this, but it's just, again, it's just me speculating on what could potentially be in the future for Italian women's soccer and Australia.
While we're on that, though, we need to talk about, and the subject naturally lends itself to talking about the issue of pay equity in women's world, women's soccer. Mm-hmm. The fact that the prize money for the women's participants is going to be less than a quarter of what it is for the men. Mm-hmm. In fact, were the women to the, and this is just the USA women, if they were to win the World Cup, they would make about a quarter of what the men would for just making it through the group stages of the Gold Cup. When you consider how much more money, some $20 million that the women brought in last year, in just prize money alone, and how much more they're going to bring in this year with their tournament run. And while it would not be a shock to see the men go out in the group stages of the Gold Cup, it would be a complete shock to see the women go out in the group stages of the World Cup. We're expecting a semifinal run. Now, that could be, you know, right now, if everything lines up the way that it's supposed to, there's a quarterfinal match with France. That could be a bit tricky. I'm not going to hate on them if they get to the quarterfinals and they get France, and that's a tough one, and they lose. But we're expecting at least that, right? Can we get to a point where we can just agree now, even with the subsidies for contracts and stuff, that the tournament prize money and the playing conditions for the USA women need to be improved?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's difficult to say because the appetite for women's soccer is, of course, going to be greater here than in other parts of the world and probably most other parts of the world. But it would be, if the prize money is done from the viewership or sponsorship from the global market, I can understand why it may not be quite as high, because as far as the support that women's sports get in the United States, it far outweighs vast majority of the other countries of the world. So I'm not excusing it at all. I'm just trying to offer some sort of speculation for the rationale behind it. But at least I think for the international game, you look at the number of caps that these women have. There are women in their mid-20s who have 100 caps for their country. So
yeah, but they're also playing.
Is their professional league, in a sense. It's like they play so many more international games. mainly because also they don't have the same restrictions as far as international tournaments are concerned. Their Olympic Games is not a U23 tournament. So so for international play, yeah, I think it really shouldn't even be close to what the prize money is for U.S. women versus U.S. men. I have a sense that U.S. is dipping into the pot that's for the world stage because, you know, there's no – I mean, I just don't see a women's World Cup final competing with a men's World Cup final when it comes to sponsorships and popularity. But the at least from the U.S. perspective is concerned, I mean, you talked about that outing that you were at where you had never seen anything like that for women's soccer. And the primary reason that it's like that is because it's one international event that is a global event that the U.S. win. And, you know, you look at a lot of the U.S. competes in just about everything, but the U.S. doesn't always win in everything. And equating it to like USA basketball, where it's basically the United States and whoever decides to have a good team that year, the U.S. women are seeing a huge growth in the game globally as far as women players are concerned, especially this World Cup is concerned. That because I don't want to say complaints because they're not really complaining. They're shedding light on this is extraordinarily justified. And again, this is another thing that Hope Solo was very adamant about as well. That you would hope that this would eventually turn itself around and you would see more support from a business perspective for the eyes that these women are bringing into potential sponsorships.
I think it's that, but I think there are some legitimate grievances right there.
And oh, I agree.
One is like the playing conditions where they're forced to play on turf a lot more. You know,
yeah.
I understand that you're not expecting to sell out Soldier Field for a non-international women's final.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you can't sell out Toyota Park or mm-hmm. PPL or Audi mm-hmm. Field, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they can't. We've made all of these soccer-specific grass stadiums in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't the women play the majority of their games there? Why do they have to play on turf? Why can't they play at Talon Energy Stadium? Why can't they play at Audi Field? Why can't they play at Red Bull?
Mm.
Is there something about them having to play in Rochester? Is there a rule that they have to play in Hartford? You know, I'm not saying that you got to sell out, that you got to put games right now at Yankee Stadium. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't see a men's game at RFK, and there were only 8,000 people in the stands.
Well, yeah, I've been at RFK games where there's 3,000
people in the
stands. But I think that's
right.
More of a cry for RFK, but still.
Yeah,
yeah, you're right.
But,
yeah, I mean,
but
absolutely.
You've got Audi Field right here with a beautiful grass stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't that host women's games? Why can't Talon Energy host? Why can't Toyota Park? Why can't Children's Mercy in Kansas City? Why
mm-hmm.
can't you put them where we have the stadiums right now? I'm not saying that you need to equalize everything, you know, but – and that's why, like, there was this interesting stat, like the top 72 women's players don't make what Neymar makes in a season.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
that's – not only is that an indictment on the pay for women's players, but that also speaks to the fact that Neymar probably just makes way too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we're just talking about pure prize money in the United States in one country, I think we can equalize it a little bit
mm-hmm.
better. And
mm-hmm.
I give them full credit for bringing attention to that and the playing conditions. And I think they've got the platform and they're right. The other thing about this is, you now have a team like Olympique Lyon, which is not saddled by a federation, that is able to offer better wages and bonuses than any professional team in the United States, which I think might have an impact on USA soccer in the future because women, the ladies are going to have to make a choice. I can hunt my eligibility like we have seen so many of the men do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is not a thing. Who was the Arsenal player who used to play for Croatia?
Eduardo. I think it was Eduardo. Yeah.
Who was so not Croatian.
Right. Yeah. Eduardo da Silva. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the most Croatian name ever. But because there is almost a clause with the USA soccer contracts that they have to play in the NWSL.
Right.
Where they can only have no more than four players, where Lyon can have eight from the same team.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyon is able to offer better wages. If I'm thinking, well, hey, look, playing for the USA women is nice. But I'm pretty sure if I go back far enough, I can shake off an English grandmother. And then I can play for Lyon, make the money, and I'll declare my eligibility for the USA women's team.
But you could
have to deal with this.
Yeah. But see, I think also, though, as far as from the league perspective is concerned, look at what's happened with the WNBA, where you see a lot of those players who play in the WNBA to gain sponsorship dollars and to get some exposure in the U.S. market, but then they go to Russia to make their money. The Russia has basically said they want it to be the kind of the home of women's basketball. We want to have the best women's basketball league. And you're seeing a lot of American players go there. And a lot of times, like I've heard from various players say that they go, you know, you kind of come to the U.S. to play for your fans, to be at home, and then you go to Russia to make your money. And they've even had players sit out a year where they say, hey, you know, this particular team you're playing for is going to give you an additional $200,000 to $300,000 if you just don't play the WNBA this year, where they're going to pay you $40,000. A lot of players are going, deal. I will gladly do that. So I think that's positive for the women. I think that it's easy to when your primary method of exposure is from the international game, it's easy for an international federation to make it seem like your success is due to your exposure from them. And you should be accepting whatever they have the ability to pay you. And on the flip side, though, you're going to see more and more and more clubs who are noticing a revenue stream from the women's game are going to start to do things similar to what Olympic Lyon's doing. And I think that's all positive. I think it's all positive. I mean, this whole American model of the draft and having rights and having and being kind of stuck in one particular system is eventually going to die out when you have more exposure from players. And you're going to see more players saying, I'm going to shop my talents to the highest bidder, which is what happens in most of the rest of the world. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And, you know, you're also looking at these national teams. I think 20 years ago, you saw where all the top players are playing on some various team in the United States, and that's just not the situation anymore.
Well, there's so many things that you just brought up. Number one, I want to go back where you talked about the best player. The funny thing is the best women's player in the world is not playing in the World Cup. Could, but isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Ada Hegerberg from Norway.
Yeah, she bounced for some reason, yeah.
Well, no, she said she's not going to play for Norway until their pay equity. So she has refused call-ups. So she's not there. Best, you know, two-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year, first winner of the Women's Ballon d'Or. Best player and women's player in the world right now. Not at the World Cup. I couldn't imagine a men's World Cup where the best player in the world, be it Neymar, be it Ronaldo, was eligible and did not play in protest. If they made that statement, somebody would pay attention. So I hope that I want to bring attention to this because somebody needs to be paying attention to the fact that we are being deprived of the ability to see the best right now as judged by the writers. I don't get a lot of European women's club soccer, so I have not seen her play, and that's through no fault of my own. But the best women's world player is not being seen in the most likely venue for her to be seen. It's because of this. So we don't have that. When we talk about the draft and the best players, yes, I think you're right. But then, look, you know what the other thing is? Jamaica making their inaugural Women's World Cup debut.
Mm-hmm.
And where do most of their players come from? The United States.
Mm-hmm.
They have a strong contingent of American-born Jamaican players. Now,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those ladies were like, I have been like some of the men that we've seen who have come over to the U.S. Let's take John Anthony Brooks, starting mm-hmm. center back for the U.S. on most days. German-born, one German parent, one he's a child of a service member, born in Germany.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaks primarily German. Has grown mm-hmm. up his whole entire life in Germany. Opted to play for the U.S. Why did he opt to play for the U.S.?
Because he couldn't get a call up for Germany.
Yeah, wasn't going to get a call up for Germany, so mm-hmm. I want to play international soccer, so I'll declare. Mm-hmm. So I know that there's a part of these ladies who are saying, you know, and I'm not saying that's the whole thing. Like, it's certain for the nation of your identity. And with Caribbeans, you know as well as I do that especially Jamaican runs very, very thrill.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Jamaican-American, you are Jamaican first.
Yes, absolutely. And that's if your grandmother's Jamaican.
That could be if your great-grandmother was Jamaican. If somebody in your household speaks Jamaican patois, you are Jamaican first.
You're Jamaican.
All right, but I'm looking at, you know, you've got the Sidney Lou situation where it's like, yeah, I have dual eligibility between the U.S. and Canada, but I'm going to play for the U.S. because I can win some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that this is the case for all of them. I don't know these ladies, but I'm going to go with some of them are probably on the periphery of the USA women's poll. And when you brought up earlier, like Jill Ellis is going to be questioned about the women that she brought and women that she did not.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the depth of that pool, to be in that situation where you have to make that determination about who to bring and who not to, there's going to be a sizable number of people who are going to be left off and who are then going to be eligible for other countries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's true.
But USA Soccer Development has in large part NWSL, and this goes for the men too, because
mm-hmm.
we've seen what USL, what MLS has done for especially the Caribbean nations.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A rising tide lifts all ships. And that has helped, I think, in large part, help Jamaica and the reggae gals qualify mm-hmm. for this World Cup. And I'm happy to have them.
Cool. Yeah.
So, what's up with your boy? Is he coming on or what?
Well, apparently that one may not work out.
Okay, cool.
Such is life.
Yeah.
We continue on, and we've got plenty of stuff to talk about. We're about to put a bow on the Women's World Cup conversation, and we'll do that with this. I already know your prediction.
Mm-hmm.
USA Women?
Yeah, absolutely.
I find it hard to bet against them. And I don't know what it is. France puts a little bit of a worry on me. And I'm not going to have a fully formed opinion until we do this next week. And I've seen mm-hmm. the entirety of the group stage.
Right.
But I'm with you. I find it hard to bet against the USA women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last World Cup, I picked the USA women. I think that was partially out of ignorance. Having mm-hmm. watched them in the finals against Japan and then only paid attention to them again on the eve of the World Cup, decided, hey, this was a team that lost in the finals. They'll be back. Much like France coming into the World Cup from the Euros, they will win again. This time around, I paid a little bit more attention, and I've got questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes knowledge is the worst thing in the world because it makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
And I do so much better when I don't have to think. But I'm going to go with the win. I have mm-hmm. my concerns, the defense, but a couple of good performances will alleviate that. And look, Carly Lloyd's from my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
She's from Delran, New Jersey. I know exactly where that is. Everybody who's been to Delran, raise your arm. Your hand. Been there.
Dude, she kind of reminds me. I mean, this is probably so wrong to say this, but I don't know. When you see her play, when she plays that a little bit more of a defensive midfield role, she's got some Edgar Davids in them, you know? She's
got some Edgar Davids. She's got some Ronaldinho. I love me some Carly Lloyd. Love my wife. But had I met Carly Lloyd back in the day, I would have borne her children.
All right. I had a thought popped in my head. I'm going to leave that one alone. I might. Just trying to keep the show clean, you know?
Yes. No, I said exactly what I meant.
Oh,
plus,
man.
She a local girl. She one of my people. She from Delran. She know the she birds. You know, I can't mess with Julie Ertz because I'm kind of scared of Zach.
Hello. Sorry, I had technical difficulty. My bad.
I'm kind of scared of Zach, but yeah, I think that's what's and one of the most. And I don't want to objectify the USA women.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say this. There was a picture from the 16 Olympics of Alex Morgan wearing a Manchester United kit.
Oh, God.
I instantly fell in love with her that night. And it had
there it
to
is.
With,
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, all right.
It had nothing to do with her looks. It just shows me that her decision process is on point.
Well, so, you know, it's easy to jump on the bandwagon, right?
Yeah, because if I wanted to do that, I could have rooted for Arsenal, and that would have gotten me nowhere.
Yeah, fair enough. I refuse to say anything in defense of that team right now, so I have to change my mind.
So, I think we're both going to go with the USA women. So, before we move on and we talk on the other half, and I'll bring that in with a question for you. I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, as always, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area's best venue for live sports and entertainment. I am looking forward to being out there about 3 o'clock tomorrow and watching the USA women in their World Cup. I don't want to say debut, but their initiation into this defense of the world title on that big screen. And you know it's going to be a party. So if you're in the area, come down. The beer will be cold. The room will be warm, and the TV will be good. So, I had said, I think this is a summer that could be huge for USA soccer. Kind of like we had the opportunity to do 4 years ago and failed to capitalize on it. We have the Women's World Cup. We have the Gold Cup. And we have the U-20s, all of which are competing and competing well. I remember in 15, the energy that was generated by the USA women transferred over into the USA World, into the Gold Cup. And there were a lot of people out watching the USA men waiting for them to do something.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it was going to happen after the 6-2 Cuba match. But then they went out in the semifinals to Jamaica and lost the third place game. And that began a long descent to non-qualification for the World Cup for USA men. I felt like had they capitalized on that moment and gotten to the finals and put in a good shift, it could have been transformative for USA men. I feel like we're at that again. USA women are competing. U-20s already out in the quarterfinals of the U-20 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I must take that as my first step. I don't want to hate on them too much.
Mm-hmm.
Third straight quarterfinal exit. Yes, I would have liked to have seen progress, but you know how hard it is to keep competing at that level when
mm-hmm.
the majority of your players age out
right.
after each tournament.
Yeah.
It is a tournament built so that you can't bring the same team twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fact that we've been into three consecutive quarterfinals and took out this time a very strong France team before losing 2-1 to Ecuador a couple
mm-hmm.
of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Big shouts out to Tim Weah, Sergio Santo, Paxton Pomykal. Those guys performed very well. I was very pleased with what they did. I thought I would have liked to have seen them get further into semifinals, possibly finals, possibly win. But that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they did their part.
Mm-hmm.
We know the U.S. and women are going to do their part.
Mm-hmm.
Are the men up to the game?
No.
I'm with you. I don't think so.
No, I don't either. I don't either. It's you don't want to weigh too heavily on these last two games, but I mean, the two things that were the glaring notices I had were, of course, the defensive mishaps were the mistakes, but it was also there was a lot of ball watching by the defense where they felt like they were waiting for the better player to fix the mistake, to clean up the mess. But then I saw a continued problem with the U.S. that's been going on for decades is their inability to finish. And they had their chances, especially especially in the second half. They had their chances. And, you know, you're looking at for shots on target versus shots on goal. Same number of shots on target for U.S. versus Venezuela, yet it amounted to zero goals. 10 corner kicks, you know, equal on possession, 13 total shots. I just, this lack of control in the box, this lack of ability to actually get a good solid foot on a ball and put the ball in the corner away from the goalie just seems to be a talent that the U.S. just doesn't have. And Jozy Altidore is still their best option as a number nine. And when he eventually slows down, there's no one there to replace him. And Jozy Altidore has had issues finishing his whole career. The downfall of this team is constantly going to be their inability to score goals. And that's just not going to change. It's not going to change.
But do you take hope from what we saw at the U-20 level? I was not in love with playing Timothy Weah on the wing, but when we needed a pass, when we needed a move, when we needed something created, he did it.
Right. Who's going to put the ball in the goal?
But that's the other thing. I watched Celtic play this year, and you know who was popping up and putting the ball in the net for him a lot of times? Tim Weah.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure that right wing is his best position. Like, he plays well, better than Zardes does,
mm-hmm.
certainly,
mm-hmm.
with his back to the net. I saw against Jamaica that Josh Sargent has a knack. He needs to work on his finishing, but
mm-hmm.
he's 18 years old.
Yeah.
I question the wisdom of but it tells me a lot about what you see of bringing Josh Sargent into camp and letting him play in those friendlies, but not Tim Weah. It tells me that the primary role that you see in the future for Tim Weah is on the wing,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. Mm-hmm. And you said with Paola and Christian Pulisic in camp, he's not going to be your primary option on either position. But I also then watched him play as a striker for Celtic for the second half of the season after he went out on loan and saw him do it effectively,
mm-hmm.
and then saw a general lack of ability and was frustrated by watching Giassi Zardes try to play number nine and failing, and said, why wasn't he on this? If you're saying I want him to have tournament games, I want him to have consistency, me, you know, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And like you said, we're not going to have Giassi Zardes, or we're not going to have Josie Altidore forever,
mm-hmm.
right? Somebody else needs to. Okay, so Josh Sargent plays strike.
Mm-hmm. He's a big center forward, is what he is.
But what happened to some of these kids that we brought along and thought that they were going to be good?
Yeah, Julian Green. What happened to him? I believe he's in Bundesliga 2.
Yeah, well, that never materialized.
Right.
I'm thinking about Njankovic, the other big kid that they brought in
mm-hmm.
that they liked. He didn't even make the Gold Cup qualify. Giassi Zardes, I promise you, I thought was only in there because he knows Greg Berhalter and he knows how he wants to play. But
that's Berhalter's boy. It's obvious that he's on the field because he's one of Berhalter's – he's one of his guys.
And it
just seems like he goes, you know what? I got to bring that's he's a loyal. I don't know. You know, I mean, I was watching ESPN. They were talking about the same situation and they also said, I mean, they said the same thing. Like, you know, is he just one of Greg's boys and he's just going to roll with Greg as long as Greg's still in charge? It sounds like that's more of a situation because it's not like he's providing anything that is pivotal toward the U.S.'s success. But I was even talking about him in that playoff game against DC United last year, where he basically took up a lot of space, and that was about it.
He is so frustrating.
Yeah.
In that we know
you already know what you're
going to
get from him.
He can run fast, and he has a really awful first touch,
mm-hmm.
and we saw that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we saw all of that. And this is one of my great frustrations with MLS and the sort of young players who get into MLS and stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put Giassi Zardes in that, and I'm going to put
mm-hmm.
Paul Areola in
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they never develop those additional skills.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I've been screaming about with USA and MLS and U.S. development. Is that these guys peak out in MLS and they stay because we entice them to do it and we'll throw the money and we'll throw the designated player tag at them.
Mm-hmm.
But what really is best for USA Soccer is if they go someplace else and develop some additional skills.
Yes.
And I've not seen Paul Areola really develop the skill.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond running down the right wing and putting
mm-hmm.
in the occasional cross.
Mm-hmm. But
I don't
understand that because you've seen American defenders do that. They go out there and they try. I mean, I'm thinking of like Oguchi Onyewu, signed by AC Milan. It never worked out. His injuries were hitting him. He just wasn't quite at the level. But he elected to stay for free. Because he wanted the development. He wanted the opportunity to practice.
He was playing at Standard Liège before.
I understand that.
There.
But he was trying to stay is what I meant. He was trying
to
get that development.
He was trying to stay. But he was already getting it. He was already in Belgium before.
True, he was already in Belgium. But he tried to keep getting to the point where he could play against the best players in the world to make himself the best possible defender he could be. And you're right. You're not seeing that from American attack at this point. Hopefully that will change. You know, hopefully Tim Way stays and doesn't get sucked back and gets sucked in the MLS. Hopefully Josh Sargent gets sucked in the MLS. I feel like Bobby Wood. I love the fact that he stayed in Germany as long as he has, but I feel like he's hit his ceiling as well. He's not going to really be much better than he currently is.
Well, we see the ceiling with Bobby Wood. Now I give Josh Sargent a whole lot of credit.
I do too.
For, for saying, I'm going to go over and play for Werder Bremen.
Mm-hmm. At 18,
when he could
17.
At 18. Mm-hmm. 17, 18. I would like to see Andrew Carleton,
mm-hmm.
who is on the books with Atlanta United. I'd mm-hmm. like to see, I hope, my hope is after this World Cup, this U-20 World Cup, Pox and Pomacow moves out from Real Salt Lake
mm-hmm.
and goes over to Europe. Germany has already said, you know, Weston McKennie.
Mm-hmm.
We see Tyler Adams. So
mm-hmm.
we do see some of them are more attack-minded players.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Way is going to – so I see that. And I'm not saying that – it's not that – I just feel like these guys need to go to another level. And that Bundesliga, Champions League, Europa League is where
mm-hmm.
that's at.
Right.
And when you
Europa League is underrated, man. If you're an American player and you can get into Europa League games, that is unbelievable, an unequivocal experience for an American player. Absolutely.
When you hear some of the guys talk about how it was to play against, like, Brazil and how they were watching these guys and they were learning from playing against them and watching them. And then you say, okay, well, you have the opportunity to do that day in, day out, week
mm-hmm.
in, week out,
mm-hmm.
and you're not taking it.
Right.
Then I'm upset. You know,
I've got something.
Hmm.
Do you remember when Landon Donovan went to Everton, played 10 games, scored 2 goals, played really well, and just this was after his spell in Germany when he was 18. And he basically said, I don't see the reason to go there and play. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong.
No,
but
that was different.
You see some equivalency there.
Okay, so the Landon Donovan went over twice.
Yeah.
To play.
By Leverkusen.
Leverkusen was the last one.
It was loaned to Everton.
He was loaned to Everton later on in his career.
Mm.
And by then
he was effective when he got there. He played really well that 10-game stretch. He was good.
He actually did it twice. 2 years, that was what mm-hmm. he did in the offseason as he went over there. And he wanted to stay. But by then he had become so important to MLS that they would not let him leave.
Yeah, they were paying him a lot of money at that point.
No, and there was no transfer. There was no reasonable transfer fee. That
mm-hmm.
could be negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
So young Landon Donovan went over. Middle-aged Landon Donovan was at LA Galaxy
mm-hmm.
when David Beckham got there.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly more mature Landon Donovan got to Everton later on in his career and was extremely effective and helped Everton out. Like,
mm-hmm.
he helped them out.
Yeah.
And he wanted to stay over there.
They were starting.
But was not allowed. For him,
I feel like that's a shame. That's a shame. Hmm.
But the other part of it was, I don't think that Landon Donovan at 29, 30, 31, when he was going over there,
mm-hmm.
was going to be that much better for the U.S. And at that point, I was never a big, huge Landon Donovan fan.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie and say I was either.
And I thought that the U.S. was in a position where they needed to move on from Landon Donovan
mm-hmm.
because he was starting to get bigger than the team.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great winger, but he was starting to do stuff for the team. He was a great winger, and he was one of the better strikers. And he would have been a great option and solved a lot of problems had he played striker, but he
mm-hmm.
refused to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He said he didn't want to play with the back goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him and remember, who was his contemporary? Deuce.
Oh, Clint Dempsey.
Deuce stayed over there
mm-hmm.
at Fulham, had the seasons at Fulham,
mm-hmm.
went to Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
Scored goals for Tottenham.
Yeah. Yeah.
Helped them out in the Champions League
mm-hmm.
helped them qualify for the Champions League.
Right.
And came back later on in his career.
Yeah, for $5 million a year. They threw a lot of money at him.
But at that point in time, when he was going over to Everton, I don't think that you could have altered Landon Donovan's game that much.
Yeah.
I think
but I was more speaking about that from the perspective of making the image of American players just having that natural progression to go on to Europe be more of a thing, since he was such a pivotal player in U.S. soccer.
We're starting to see it's more coming from young players over in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from the Weston McKinneys. It's coming from the Josh Sargents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even DeAndre Yedlin at Newcastle.
Newcastle, yeah.
We're going to see how Zach Steffen fares for Man City.
Yeah, well, he's going to get loaned immediately.
I will lay you a bet right now.
Seriously?
I'll go out and eat a squirrel if he starts a Premier League game for Man City.
Like, fully, like, throughout his whole career. Yeah.
Throughout his whole career.
I think he'll never start a game for Man City.
I will go out and I will have Mama Sonia clean me a squirrel and I will eat it on the air if he starts a Premier League game for Man City.
Yeah, tell her to get two, because I'll eat one too, because I don't see that happening at all. I think what I could see him doing, though, granted, it won't be in the same vein as Tim Howard, because Tim Howard did play a couple of seasons and started for Manchester United. But I could see Zach Steffen going in there, trying to get loans or getting loans somewhere. And if he shines, maybe catching on with a mid-level team and being a solid goalkeeper, maybe a Bournemouth or a Wolves or something like that, or even a team that
they're
really promoted, maybe a
profit, and that's what it's going to be.
Right.
Like, I think they bought Zach Steffen for a profit. They bought him cheap, and he'll catch on with like a Bournemouth or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the right place for him.
I agree.
And I think he has the capacity to be a good keeper. Mistakes against Venezuela aside,
mm-hmm.
I think he has a good capacity, but I just don't see how he gets into Man City setup.
No.
The U.S. has had
some great goalkeepers play in the Premier League. They really have, but I just don't see the situation being one of those.
They've had phenomenal ones. I remember.
Yeah.
I think I remember a time when like 7 Premier League teams had U.S. keepers.
Yeah, and I remember a time where 4 were starting. I mean, Tim Howard was starting. Brad Friedel
was starting. Marcus Hahnemann was starting.
Yeah. And
Marcus
Hahnemann
started in a game that ended up 7-4.
Jeez. There was a time when Rooney was saying that Brad Friedel was the best goalie in the Premier League. And that wasn't that long ago. So Keller's still a fan favorite over at Leicester City.
I disagree with Brad Friedel because I think at the time that he said that Brad Friedel was the best keeper in the Premier League, I think Timmy Howard still was.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Timmy Howard won Golden Gloves.
But I'm just saying, the respect was always there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, USA goalkeepers are widely looked upon as being very, very good. This is actually a weird sort of circumstances post-Timmy Howard era.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Guzan never... I think it's because Brad Guzan is short for goalkeepers.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of stocky. He's about 6'3", but he just has short arms.
He's 6'2", and he has Tyrannosaurus arms.
Yeah. They got him listed at 6'4", but...
He's 6'2" on any given day.
His arms are short, though. He does. He doesn't have that...
You know
that,
what I like to say?
That wingspan.
He got Method Man arms.
Yeah.
He got them, I can't get my wallet out my pocket arms.
Right.
He got them Tyrannosaurus arms. He got them Fat Joe.
Yeah.
Lean back to get my wallet out my pocket.
Yep.
Lean back.
Big fun arms.
He got them lean back arms.
Yep.
But, you know, and I'm not saying that he wasn't a good goalkeeper, but I don't think he was ever going to reach what Tim Howard was ever was able to. And to be honest, the best move Tim Howard ever made was going away from Manchester United to Everton, where he did not have the pressure on him, because he turned it. There was a time a couple of years ago where I would have argued that he was one of the top five goalkeepers in the world.
In the world, yeah. And I don't think you would have gotten a lot of arguments.
No, because I brought up the point. I said, you know, you've got – this was in the early aughts. Late aughts, early tens. But you had Gigi Buffon. Manuel Neuer and David De Gea hadn't become who they were.
You had Iker Casillas.
Eddie van der Sar. And then Tim Howard. And this was right around the time that he put on that miniature defense 16-save game against Belgium. And I said, he was the one of the top five goalkeepers. Now, it also cracks me up that he's a doppelganger for Common.
But he doesn't have the beard, yeah.
When he does have the beard, he is a doppelganger for Common. What was it? The that World Cup, the 14 World Cup. I had to go down to Fayetteville, North Carolina, on business. I promise you, this is a completely true story.
I know Fayetteville well.
I had to go down to Fayetteville, and I typically have. I don't now, but I used to have my hair cut very, very short and a beard. And I go into a DoubleTree in Fayetteville, and I go to a hotel restaurant. I'm getting dinner and a couple of drinks. And there is nothing on but Gold Cup replay or World Cup replay and NASCAR racing. And there's like three people, there's like four people in the hotel restaurant. A couple of people waiting on a bachelor party, and a good old boy wearing a Dale Earnhardt hat and his wife. And a good old boy looks at me, points at me, says, "Boy, what you doing here?" And I look at him, "Oh Christ, I'm not getting out of here alive." "What you doing here? Ain't you that goalkeeper for the U.S.? I thought you was down in Brazil." And it was the first time that that boy talked, that somebody like that talked to me about soccer. I'm not Tim Howard. He's got about 2 inches on me. I'm 6'2". He's 6'4". Yeah. He's got about 2 inches on me, and I'm here, not in Brazil. But, yeah, that was one of the more interesting conversations I've ever had in my life.
That's
pretty good. I promise you that happened.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you my Thierry Henry doppelganger stories another time.
You and I both have a Thierry Henry doppelganger story.
Yeah.
And then I met Thierry Henry, and we looked nothing alike.
Yeah. I met Thierry Henry. We actually do look alike, but
you look more like him because you're a little thinner in the face than I am.
Right.
But you're closer to Thierry Henry than. But any like 6'2" light skinned person, thin person, looks like Thierry Henry.
Looks like Thierry Henry. Yeah.
But not to cast aspersions, if you have not seen Thierry Henry in the Matt McGee Ferris Bueller's Day Off skit, then you are missing out on life.
Yeah.
It is one of the funniest performances, him as a French garçon in that. Now, I would also like to give full credit to Sydney LaRue for her participation. She was amazing, but Thierry Henry is a French maitre d', and him trying to get his lines down is perhaps one of the funniest things that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
No, look it up when we get off. I tell you, that is
cool. Yeah, I'll find that when I'm particularly bored
American
one day. I'll look
promotion
that up.
That is American promotion at its best.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up, and we've gotten far afield from where I thought we were going to go, I'm concerned about this Gold Cup. I'm concerned. I thought going in off of what Greg Berhalter had done in the previous two friendlies, I thought that we were set up very well. Mexico, I don't want to say that they're not bringing bringing a B squad, maybe an A minus B plus squad.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that we had the potential. Now, Josie Altidore, depending on health, going to be there. Bradley, you got to figure out, and this is one of the things, how you fit Bradley, Tyler Adams, and Wes McKinney and Will Trapp in the same midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're playing a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, something like that, and to me, they both look very, very much the same. It's who holds back in starting positions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Because clearly, Christian Pulisic starts.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that if you're playing a 4-3-3, you can better shoehorn them in because you put Trapp, McKinney, and Adams in the midfield, put Pulisic out on the wing, and then maybe a Paul Areola because I don't know what other wingers we brought with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also,
I'm a little bit concerned.
First two games, too. But, like, look at the first two games. They're playing Guyana and Trinidad and Tobago. Now, of course, Trinidad and Tobago seem to have a little bit of a recent gamesmanship. I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of. A little bit of bragging rights over the United States right now.
Come on.
Like, what are they going to do? Yeah.
It is not the same Trinidad and Tobago team. It is not the same Trinidad and Tobago team.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that is highly reliant on MLS and USL players.
Mm-hmm.
The only teams that are carrying more USL players on their roster than Trinidad and Tobago is Haiti and Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So, this, you know, there is no more Kenwyn Jones unless they're digging up his sarcophagus and bringing
mm-hmm.
it back.
Mm-hmm.
But Kendall Watson's still a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of players on that team that scare me, and they've had to. But this is when I talk about these games versus, like, the USA women in Thailand and Chile, I don't think Guyana gets by us. I think they put – I would hope they put a 3-0 on.
Yeah, I mean
– but Trinidad right now, after what I've seen this last week, I'm not – and then it's Panama.
Mm-hmm.
I would normally think a full-strength, well-prepared USA team could put those three teams away in their sleep. I'm not so sure right now.
Exactly. But it kind of talks about what you were talking about with the women, where it's a relative lose-lose until they play Panama. And
it's a relative lose-lose until they play Trinidad and Tobago.
Well, yeah, but in the Panama game,
if they don't come out with anything short of a 2-3-0 victory against Trinidad and Tobago, what do you think?
No, it just shows you that the United States is on the same level of international competition with those very clubs that we're talking with, those very teams that we're talking about.
We're on the same level of competition right now with Japan, and I love the Jamaican national team. I think that is a good national. Two-time defending Gold Cup finalists, right?
Yeah.
And I think they could make a third. And they're not going to qualify for the Hex next year.
Yeah, but then you have, but look what you have. You have, it's just the country with unlimited resources. And, you know, you are literally, like
the country of 15 million people who can't find 23 to beat that team.
Right. To beat a country, like, let's say they draw with Guyana, who I believe has a population of about 500,000.
They won't draw with Guyana.
But you could totally see them doing that, couldn't you?
No, they won't draw with Guyana.
You could totally see them drawing with Guyana. You could see it in the end.
In my most pessimistic sense, I could see them drawing with Guyana, but they won't draw with Guyana. If you put Michael Bradley, Christian Pulisic, and Jozy Altidore in that team, I think they have enough in those three players to get by, right? Mm-hmm. I think the midfield and Greg Berhalter, they have enough to get by Guyana. Remember, Guyana can't even play in a World Cup.
No.
They have enough to get by a country whose best players play for France.
Mm-hmm.
They have.
That's French Guyana you're talking about. That's French Guyana.
Well,
this Guyana team, their best players play in England for mostly the pub league.
All right. Well, they have enough to get by this Guyana, whichever Guyana this is, right? I will claim I thought the protectorate, and I wasn't right. But
they're probably worse than French Guyana.
They have enough to get by Guyana.
Yeah.
Now,
actually, French Guyana beat them recently 2-1.
That's just because the people didn't know who they were playing for. I think they have enough to get by Guyana. I think they have enough to get by Guyana. There's enough talent on that up and down that team to get by Guyana. I look at this like I was at St. Vincent's and the Grenadines last year. In World Cup qualifying. We should beat them. If we don't, I don't care what. This is not the USA women. I'm not saying like you have to win 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
4-2, something like that is fine with me.
You can't let them score. You can't let them score. You got to go 2. You got to go 2-0.
Hey, look.
They can't let them score.
I mean, I remember against St. Vincent and the Grenadines, the U.S. let them score the opener. Came back and absolutely put it on them, but they let them score the opener.
I think St. Vincent and the Grenadines has less people than Southwest D.C. does.
They do. And Mohan, who was supposed to come on with us, is from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. He's one of the two people there. You know, St. Vincent and the Grenadines reminds me of Trinidad and Tobago. You ever meet anybody who's actually from the island of Tobago?
No. I don't
know. You know why?
Tobago.
Because it is the world's largest uninhabited island. Nobody actually lives there. I've met one person in my entire life who was actually from Tobago. I'm pretty sure it's an island of 5 people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they have the power.
I believe you watched old episodes of Anthony Bourdain's show. I think he went to Tobago for about 15 minutes of his visit to Trinidad and Tobago.
And he spent the other 45 in Trinidad.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Trinidad ain't but 6x12.
Right.
I had a buddy who got lost there once. I don't know how he pulled that off.
How? Just turn around and go back. You'll end up...
The worst part was he's actually from Trinidad and he still got lost. He was drunk that night. You can't make this
all
stuff
right.
up. We got to get off the air. You got enough to get by Guyana.
I'm sorry.
Trinidad and Panama are going to be the test.
Yeah.
I need them to beat Trinidad. Right now, I was thinking finals. I'm hoping they get through the group stage.
I'm hoping they get through the group stage, right?
I'm not sure if they get through the group stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But you look at some of the other teams that are playing in this and just looking around going, wow, you have Martinique. That's another team that can't play in the World Cup because that's a part of France. You have Bermuda, Curacao.
They can't play in the World Cup because they're Dutch.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say a significant portion of the players of black extract that played on the Dutch team that just won the Europa League have Curacao extract.
Oh, Curacao and Suriname. A lot
Curacao,
of them Suriname.
Suriname.
Yeah,
but
a
that's
lot of
where
them,
you
yeah.
get the likes
yep.
of Memphis Depay. Yeah.
But, you know, that's where you got Patrick Kluivert and Edgar Davids. They were both Surinamese players.
They were
players
Curacao.
As well.
They were
yeah.
Surinamese.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man.
And Clarence Seedorf. All right, let's wrap this up.
yeah. I was just looking at the time, and I'm on it. It's been fun. I wish I had another half hour or so to go on.
Yeah.
Don't! Because there were more stories and more stupid hijinks to come.
Absolutely.
But we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the Nations League in UEFA. Maybe we can... talk about whatever that was.
Okay, I'm not even sure what that was. Netherlands when England-Englanded.
Yep.
Can we start to use... Can we figure out... Is Englanded now a verb?
I think we could go with that. Englanded. Yeah.
I think we can add
that to the vernacular.
I don't think it's a verb. I think it's like... I need an English teacher to correct me on this. Like it's like a participle or something like that. They Englanded it.
Yeah.
England literally Englanded this stuff and go out and then come back and somehow. I do want to give Jordan Pickford credit for taking the penalty and then saving the penalty. To get them third. But that England Sweden game was about as dull an affair as you could possibly imagine.
I didn't even bother.
Full credit to Portugal for coming out on top with that. The Dutch, full credit for them. I think the on for the orange. All right, we need to get off the air.
Yeah, we gotta get out of here.
So that was what it was. Thanks a lot to you, Stead, for coming
Thanks
on
to you,
and putting
Mike.
Up with the hijinks.
Absolutely, man.
We have one too many glasses of scotch and bourbon.
Yeah, a little bit too much bourbon.
Full credit to Paul for putting up with this stuff. I don't know how you do it. We just need to give Paul a round of applause for putting up with us on a weekly
Absolutely.
Basis.
Absolutely. Golf clap. Yeah.
Thank you to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle. We will be down there in rare form watching the USA over the next week as they go through the group stages of the Women's World Cup. Looking forward to it. 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment, and they will be showing all of the World Cup matches that they can. And all the Gold Cup matches. We'll get on to that next week. I think we can do a full in-depth preview of the USA men before that, as if we haven't done it, and we need to get to talk about the transfer window next week. So, once again, as we go out, parting words, Sir Stead.
Parting words are to it's almost time for us to start to pay attention to the transfer market and see how much money Manchester United is going to spend so they can hopefully finish fifth next year.
I swear that was a shot at me.
No, it was a shot at Arsenal.
All right. Brouhaha.
Ah, that's a good one.
Not sure why, but brouhaha. It's actually a word.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny about that? There's no W in it.
Really?
That's an OU?
Yeah. No W in brouhaha.
Hmm.
All right. So, once again, for Armstead, for Paul, I'm Mike. This has been the two Guys Soccer Show. Did all right this week. We'll actually try and pay attention and do good next week.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for listening. Have a good week.
Good night, everybody.